see you coming back in here with duck knee jumpsies. I want to see you coming back in here with bloodstained jumpsies.
How could anybody go and sit and have a pint with those boys after that?
And the referee is looking around and acting as Mickey.
Tell the children to play tennis or something.
If they want to play tennis, go and play tennis.
Hello, welcome to the Three Man Weaved Ball.EGA podcast. This is a Cavan celebration podcast. And a new
again. It was Keane Mackey's celebration one last week. That was just Cavan in general.
That's Mark Friday. Mark, how's the crack?
Oh, sure, it's great, Boris. First time in 18 years going to the final. Can't believe it.
Mick McCarthy, are you as elated?
Well, like last week I was a little bit down after Clare embarrassed themselves with Tip, so now I'm obviously delighted because Clare embarrassed themselves with Limerick. But, you know, I've decided to look on the bright side. I've taken Mark's, last week Mark's joy was like a slap in my face. They'd only drawn a semi-final after all. This week, Cavan, outstanding performance, you know, high scoring, attacking football, beautiful scores. I'm enjoying your love of GA because it's replacing the fact that my heart has been twisted. And all of the life has been come out of me, and I've just been left with this withered, black, empty piece of tissue that Jesus. Is beating in my chest well, at the moment. But I'm taking joy from your enjoyment of this.
It's good
world.
To know. Yeah. Thank God it started to rub off. Because I was wondering, is anybody else interested in Cavan at all? I know we've been pushing this agenda for a long time now, and like even yesterday's game for a neutral, I went back through the stats. Right now, I have to add the caveat that this was bleary eyed through Wikipedia pages, various Wikipedia pages on my mobile phone going to bed last night. But I've gone back to 1960, and yesterday was only the second time that there was a game in Ulster football that had 40 scores in it. And Declan Bogue was looking through it as well since that. He has actual record books, which are a bit more reliable than Wikipedia, and he couldn't find one that comes close. Like, you'd imagine 60 minutes, lower scoring anyway, that 50s and 40s aren't going to throw up anything. So yesterday was only the second time in history. I've not looked through nearly 100 years worth of data.
So you're saying Cavan would want to shore up their defence a little bit?
Well, that and just that it was really entertaining.
It was?
And also, by the way, just for the record, the first game to ever feature 40 scores was Cavan against Tyrone a few years ago, the mad replay. So take your black death, and as The Rock would say, turn it, wipe it down, turn it sideways, and shove it up all your arses, because there's no such thing as the black death, and there never was.
Did you watch that game, Morris? I know it wasn't live on television.
I did watch it, yeah. I actually watched it twice, because I'm going to do an attack on some myths and misconceptions later on.
You watched that game twice. Did you watch the two hurling matches yesterday afternoon?
I did, yeah.
Did you watch the Sky Sports the Cork and Waterford game on Saturday?
Yeah.
Did you watch the Donegal and
I was in the office Saturday in evening? Fairness, so I watched them at work. Yeah, I did.
Yeah, Saturday. And did you watch the two John McDonough Cup matches that were on GAA now?
I watched one and a half John McDonough games because the stream was in a holy disgrace. So yeah, I watched a fair bit of GAA this weekend. You forgot Sunday game.
I forgot the Sunday game. You watched 2 hours of the Sunday game.
In total, 8. But well, 6 plus 2 back to prove a point.
So you watched the 2 a second time?
Yeah, just...
Right, okay. Just and did you watch any other sport this weekend, Morris?
No, I didn't.
I think you did. I think you watched the Ireland under-20s against
Australia. Oh, I did. I did. Ireland under-20s against Australia,
and
yeah.
And he was working all weekend. He did about 15 articles on balls.ie over the course of the 2 days. I think we need
Denmark
to get him some help.
Did you watch any of the Nation League games?
No.
Jeez, you missed a thriller there with Portugal.
I watched the England penalty shootout, but I was in the office for that.
I'm wondering, should we get more? Like, I thought I was going good. I watched the Sunday game and I watched 4 live games this week, and I feel like I've everything in the world to say about you. I think we need to get him some help, Mark.
Yeah, definitely. You need to go to GA Addicts Anonymous.
Do you know what? a really quick aside. I was at home last night. I was trying to watch, prove a point that when Derek McVitie, we'll talk about this later, when Derek McVitie gets on the ball is usually such a crucial time. So I was watching the game back a third time, but on at 6 at a speed to see when he was getting on the ball. So I had it by 6 on Virgin Media, and my girlfriend says to me, I must be the only man, like, I can understand guys who love like Liverpool above their girlfriend or love like Messi above their girlfriend, but I must be the only girl in the country, in the world, going out with a Galway man who loves Darragh McVitie more than he knows his girlfriend.
Oh, God bless her.
We'll talk about that later on in the show. The attacking structure, not my girlfriend. We're going to do our usual whining and moaning, but I'm putting my foot down. I'm sick of Mark Farley coming on this podcast talking about Cavan.
It's crazy.
So instead, we're going to go to AngloCell Sports Editor, an integral part of the We Are Cavan podcast, Paul Fitzpatrick, on to talk about Cavan.
Yes.
Paul, how's the form?
Not too bad, lads. How's it going? I hope you're all as happy as we are down here in Cavan.
Yeah, hasn't worn off yet, obviously.
No, the place is buzzing. I have to say, I was in around Cavan Town this morning now, and genuinely, it might sound like a cliche, but genuinely, there are people going around with it, pepping the step this morning. Like, people are absolutely buzzing about it. It's just been so long waiting to get to an Ulster final list. And doing it in such style as well, it really has unleashed the whole dormant Cavan support, I suppose you could call it.
Paul, for you personally, what was your own, I suppose, expectations of this team? Like, obviously, relegation in the league wasn't ideal, and then even approaching into the Ulster Championship, would you have foreseen a final on the horizon?
Funnily enough, I was very confident that we'd beat Monaghan, because I just had heard about all the players that Monaghan were missing, and we had home advantage, and Cavan have played well in Berkeley Park this year. But I wasn't hugely confident that we'd get over Armagh the first day. Now, the second time around, generally favourite to win the replay, and I thought we probably would win it, but I couldn't say that from the start of the year I saw an Ulster final appearance in this Cavan team. I did write a piece back in the New Year's issue of our paper, and I said that I thought Cavan would get over the line and get an Ulster title under Mickey Graham, but I definitely didn't see it happening this year.
Paul, we had to get you on. We'll talk about how they get on the Ulster final, but we had to get you on because Mark basically filibusters here every week talking about Cavan, so much so that I kind of zone out and stuff. So I'm sure I've heard all this before, but now that we actually have you on, I actually am listening for a change. What is it about kind of this group that sort of led to this coming through? Because obviously it's been a long time since, you know, Cavan have been like truly at the top table, but this team has been kind of like eking away there, kind of in and out of Division 1 for the last few years, but it seems like it's just come alive this year. It's not all down to the change of manager, I presume. Has this been coming for a while?
Yeah, well, if you're playing pundit bingo, really, what you have to say when you're talking about Cavan is that they used to be very defensive and now they're attacking, and you have to mention the under-21s, and that's kind of really the way all this punditry has gone about Cavan.
Also, remember, they love their football in Cavan.
They do.
Oh yeah, proud football county.
Great tradition.
Definitely. But I think, and the other one is that it's a young team. I've been hearing that for a long time, and probably that was peddled a bit by Cavan as well with the whole Futures Blue thing, but it hasn't been a young team for the last few years. So to answer your question, what has changed with Cavan? Like, with 9 minutes to go in the game yesterday, Cavan were winning by a point, and I've seen it so many times, and Mark would have seen it as well, that we would lose the game in that situation. And the funny thing is, it's basically the same bunch of players. So of the sort of leading lights of the team at the minute, the only new player is Conor Rehill, who's been a revelation at wing-back. But most of the players have been there a good number of years. Like, looking through the team, the likes of Ray Gallagher is there 10 years. Okay, he was outfield, but he's well-seasoned. McLaughlin's there since 2012. Clark is there since 2012. Faulkner's there since 2015. Conor Minas there, I think, since 2014. Garold McKernan is there since 2011. McVitie made his debut in a quarterfinal against Kerry in 2013. Martin Riley, 2007. Kian Mackey, 2005. So the main players on the team are very seasoned. They have been there a long time. Why are they now starting to close out these type games? You'd have to look at what has changed, and I'd say the management have to take huge credit for it. I know that Mickey Graham is what he has done is he's come in and he's the boss. So maybe, especially under Madeleine, and maybe the players were sort of, it was a collaborative type approach. And I know that there was a lot of talk last year where Cavan they got well beaten by Donegal in the Ulster Championship and went very defensive in the qualifiers. And that was apparently led by the players that they decided to just go completely defensive and stop leaking scores. But with Mickey Graham, I don't think that washes. You know, he's in charge, and possibly that's what this Cavan bunch of players needed, was just a firm hand. Not that they were messers or anything like that, but they just needed strong guidance, and I think they got that. And obviously Martin Corey has come in, Vinny Corey's brother, who trained Castlerahan last year, so he was a big part of the Castlerahan success. So immediately there would have been respect there for him, and for people who don't know the ins and outs of the Cavan club scene the way myself and Flaherty do. That was a big thing for Castlerahan because they had lost three finals in a row. So he knew what it took to get over the line. Obviously, Graham had the Mullinocta thing, and his name was on everyone's lips. He was sort of a national figure coming in, taking over Cavan. And then you have Dermot McCabe there as well, who who was a brilliant Cavan player and a winner. With poor enough Cavan teams at times, he was a standout player. And Darren McCabe is just, he would have a very deep-seated type of confidence about him. And that has obviously rubbed off as well. So I'd say the management have to take huge credit.
There's it's funny you mentioned the experience things. I noticed that yesterday during the game when it got down real tight at the end. I think it was just then Cavan had more, like they had cooler heads on them. The Armagh lads, as good as they are, like say Rian O'Neill could end up being the best player of anyone that was on the pitch yesterday. But when they went, I think they went, they came back for a point down, and then I think McVitie got a point. And then Rian O'Neill went up the pitch and tried to go around everyone. He was just one of those where he got the ball and he was like, I'm going to go for a point here, and ran almost across the entire pitch. And it was kind of that little bit of experience just to hand it off to someone maybe in a bit of a better position. But it's mad when you think about the management thing that I was thinking tomorrow was, like, it's not that long ago when Mickey Graham, or before Mickey Graham was appointed, Paul, that we weren't fully sure if he was the best choice. He was definitely a good choice, but it was like there were so many lads up, you know, there was talks of Aidan O'Rourke or Jason Riley was in the hunt. It seems mental now, the idea of not appointing Mickey
Graham. We talked about it on Friday, saying that we knew what we had in McGeaney, but we don't know what we have in Mickey Graham yet. Yeah. Because you beat Monaghan, but that's a one-off. You know what I mean? That's one match. Until you went and won the replay against a team that you're arguably better than, you can't say that Mickey Graham has done the job we all suspected he was doing.
Yeah.
You know, but now we know for sure like that he has made such a massive impact.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'd agree with that. Even in the winter, talking to Cavan supporters, there wasn't a massive cry out for Mickey Graham. Like there would have been people who wanted Graham. There were people who wanted Peter Riley and Aidan O'Rourke. And there was a rumour went around about Jim McGuinness. And I don't think that really had any legs. But the Irish news reporter. Yeah, but to be fair to Graham, he's got a very... something that's probably slipped under the radar, but I think he said it in one of the interviews after that he's never lost a replay as a manager, which is incredible. Like I know definitely he has won junior, intermediate and senior championship finals in replays with various clubs, and he won a minor league final with Cavan Gaels in a replay. So he's very, very shrewd. He's a cute operator, like, and he was a very clever player himself. And he's definitely brought that into management. And he served his apprenticeship as a manager. You know, he's not just one of these sort of big-name county players who comes in as a manager, learns on the job. He was managing teams while he was still playing with Cavan. And, like, it's 15 years since he managed Butler's Bridge to win a junior championship. You know, and he's not that old. He was probably only 30 at the time, so or less. So he's been around and he's learned a lot, I'd imagine. So, like, we're delighted with him. You know, hopefully he's safe for another few years.
He's not afraid to make tough decisions either. Like and maybe Paul was carrying an injury, but Paul's brother got dropped from the 26 for yesterday's match. So it was, you know, it's a big call to make. Obviously, you've seen Mickey's father as well was out on the sideline, both in the Monaghan match and he was out half the game yesterday. So you can see it means so much to him to actually get through it. It is a difference. Like sometimes Cavan were probably guilty of looking to Jim McGuinness or some saviour from outside the county, and actually we have, I think, who was saying it was you actually, Paul, maybe the tweeter Damien, that it was the first manager from Cavan to get us to an Ulster final since 1983.
That's right, yeah. Gabriel Kelly was the manager in 83, and they said Donegal in that final as well, actually. But he's not. I was laughing because Mickey's father, Mickey Senior, would be well known football man, and he's often a steward in Bethany, but he was on the spot and on the touchline, and when the final whistle went, he put his arm around Mickey, and Mickey sort of shrugged him off like he was marking him, and he got up the sideline to shake hands with McGeaney. So I was thinking Mickey Senior might be like Paul, he might be dropped for the final. In fairness to the Graham family, they have a very interesting record. So Mickey would have won, I would say, probably 7 senior championship medals with Cavan Gaels, and he's won as a manager, he's won junior and intermediate and senior medals, and a Leinster club. Obviously he would have won an Ulster under 21 medal as a player as well, and Paul captain Cavan to an Ulster minor title, and another brother Andy was on that team, and then they all went on and won under 21 medals for Cavan as well, and of course Mickey had senior medal, Ulster medal at Cavan as well. So there's a serious amount of medals in the Graham family. It's incredible.
You mentioned the final against Donegal there, Paul. How do you see that one going?
Oh, Cavan will win it handy.
<Pulling up.
laughs> I think Mark was saying there that Mickey's not afraid to make some big calls. I think that he's going to have to make a couple of big calls again for the final, realistically speaking. the draw against Armagh was, in hindsight, might be a blessing, because he will have learned a lot about the team. Like, to get three championship matches going into an Ulster final is brilliant. And, you know, there were a couple of fellas that are probably struggling to perform at the minute, and he is likely going to have to make a couple of big calls there. But I think if he can get the best 15 players in form on the field, I don't think Cavan would fear Donegal. What we have at the minute is a very athletic defence. So if you take Killian Clark, who's, in my opinion, the best underage player we've produced, definitely in my time. Like, he was an incredible minor number 21 player and was an exceptionally good senior when he first came through. And as he said himself in a piece in the Sunday Times there a couple of weeks ago, he went off to boil a wee bit, but he's back this year, and he's an absolute tower of strength, extremely athletic. And when you have the likes of Killian Clark there and Park Faulkner and Jason McLaughlin and this new guy Conor Rahill, who's exceptional, and Jerry Smith, unfortunately, he's injured, but they're all top class athletes, and they don't need seven or eight players in front of them to do a man marking job, which I know Michael Hannon, the columnist with our paper, he always says that he feels that's the secret of why Mayo can challenge so strongly. It's because their defenders are so athletic that they're happy enough to let them go man or man. And maybe have one sweeper, but Cavan have good enough defenders there that you can afford to push players up, and you can rely on Clark and Faulkner to hold their men at the back, which is a massive thing. Obviously, Murphy, in my opinion, the best player in the country, he's going to take a lot of watching, and Brennan and McBrearty, like, they've got so many threats. And we haven't been particularly strong in midfield. But if we can up our game a little bit around the middle, I genuinely think that Cavan can definitely make a very good argument about it. Like, I think 3-1 about Cavan is definitely a big price.
Just, there's a couple of things I wanted to run by. One, it was just more to have someone to back me up here. You mentioned a couple of lads there, the likes of Killian Clark, Jason McLaughlin, especially this year, Padraig Faulkner, McVitie, Grow McKiernan. I just want you to back me up with that these lads are top class. And it's not just me hammering here to telling these that a lot of lads might be not paying attention to them, but I think that, you know, some of them could be, you know, some of them would get any team in the country. Like, McVitie is one of the standout players in Ireland at the minute.
Ah, he is, yeah, he is. And I think it was Kieran Whelan said on Sunday game that he genuinely is a top class player. Like, I never would have seen him as an inside scoring forward, but under McLean, they sort of threw him in there, and I think they were kind of stuck for a scoring forward, and they threw McVitie in there, and he's absolutely reveled in it. Like, he's fantastic, and he's got great leadership qualities about him, as you can see. When he tends to come up with big points when they're most needed, he's a ball winner, and he can kick well off both feet. Clark is just phenomenal. He's just a tower of strength. Like, I think he would have been well known outside the county. Like, he made that international rules squad, but he has really come on this year. Like, he's physically very, very strong, and he can just cover the ground. And he wouldn't be the greatest ball player, but yet he's such a good athlete that he can do anything with the ball. Sort of, he's sort of like a manufactured footballer. He's the sort of guy that could have been brilliant at boxing or athletics or any sport, because he's just a complete athlete. I think those two are phenomenal. McLaughlin is a natural defender, and he's just a cornerback by trade, and a brilliant cornerback, like, very clean, gets a hand in, rarely fouls. Now, he had a chance full of times with Jamie Clark yesterday, but in general, he's been exceptional. And the thing with these boys is they have a lot of football played. You know, they're there for a good few years. Alongside them, I suppose another man that has stepped up this year a lot is Niall Murray. Like, he was always, in the last few years, he's been kind of floating between the half-back line and the half-forward line. They even played him cornerback, and he played full-back for his club for a while. But he was always a half-forward, and he's a club mate of Mickey Graham's, and Graham recognised that fairly quick and started playing him a half-forward. And he's playing brilliantly. I think part of that is that Martin Riley has been so good, and Grove McKiernan has been so good, that they're getting a lot of attention, and that's leaving a bit of space there for Murray. He's been exceptional. But my thinking on it is that and Conor Mina as well, actually, we should mention, he's absolutely phenomenal.
And this is turning into the Cavan All-Star Campaign Committee now or something.
Gallagher's going to go.
My thinking on it is that we do have 8 or 9 outstanding players. Like, we really do, that are top-class intercounty players. We have probably 4 or 5 that are very, very good on their day, and some of them are young, some of them are maybe not not just brilliant at that level, but they can be on the day. And I think that's where the inconsistency sometimes creeps into Cavan's play, that you can rely on probably 8 or 9 of these players to really do their job. Others, some of them haven't just found their feet fully at that level yet. So to beat Donegal, like, you're going to need obviously you're going to need everyone playing out of their skin. But yeah, no, I agree, Mark. We definitely are one of the best in the country.
Speaking of doing your job, I'm fascinated to know, as you, as like a local journalist, the next couple of weeks are obviously going to be very interesting. Like, what does that look like in terms of building up and trying to reflect that excitement that you mentioned ahead of an Ulster final?
Yeah, it's a good problem to have, I suppose. We have we don't have a huge array of sports in Cavan. Well, we have lots of sports, but football completely dominates, as Mark will tell you. So we said, for example, local junior soccer is not very strong in Cavan, whereas in our sister papers, like in the Meath Chronicle and Westmeath Examiner, places like that, they have a lot of soccer and a lot of rugby. We don't really have that. So football sort of dominates our sports pages all year round. Anyway, at this time of year and with Cavan going well, it's all everyone is talking about. So yeah, it's there will be a lot of work going into it in the next couple of weeks. We'll be looking, I suppose, to do some interviews with the last Cavan team to make the final in 2001. And then we have Mickey Hannon, who writes a sort of analysis column, and he'll be busy. I'll be hoping to get him to fill a few pages as well. But no, it'll be very busy. Yeah, it's a great problem to have.
Paul, thanks a million for coming on, and only more ramping up our Cavan bias on this podcast.
All right, lads. Thanks very much.
We are Cavan too.
Savage stuff there from Paul. Geez, they're excited.
Yeah. I think, Mark, are you all right? Are you going to make it?
I don't know.
2 weeks away?
My sister has a terrible problem that she's over in Dubai and she's meant to fly home while the final is on. Now, she's gone to so many Cavan games, and this is the first time in her living memory we've been in a final. So she doesn't know what to do. She's looking into changing her flight, but it's like €200 to change it and fly home a day earlier.
And she'll spend more than €200 going to Clonus.
Yeah, talk about catch 22.
Yeah. Do it. It's worth it.
100%, yeah.
You don't get there much. I want to talk about something that Paul brought up there. It was just in the middle of an answer, so we didn't kind of get a chance to follow up on it. But he was talking about Mickey Graham's kind of like putting his foot down and kind of taking, like, which is all teams need a manager who's fully in control. And it's interesting that, you know, the players took control a little last year, but I found it very interesting to say that the defensiveness that Cavan were kind of doing was kind of led a little bit by the players. And that brings up a very interesting point for me, that, you know, it's not always about managers having these systems. It's just the general idea out there sometimes, that the only way you can be successful is to be this kind of defensive team. So when the players and the management probably did sort of lose a little bit of their relationship and the players took over, their instinct was to go conservative and go defensive. And like, it couldn't have been more enjoyable for them, because what I noticed when you're watching the last 10 minutes of the game yesterday is that one of the reasons Cavan are able to kick on in such a brilliant way is because they're playing in such an expansive and exciting way, is that they must be so fully into this now and fully behind. Like, you know, this is a manager who's telling them to go out and play in this positive and exciting way. I just imagine that adds an extra step to their running in the 73rd minute of a game, you know? And it's fascinating to me that it's them that led it.
Yeah.
You know, in the past.
I'm glad you brought up misconceptions, right? Because there's something that I want to get off my chest. I want to bust the myth here about
Mythbusters.
Exactly, yeah.
Morris is Mythbusters.
Yeah, we'll go with that, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll take that. Since
Morris is marvellous Mythbusters. Sorry, go on.
Since 2014, all we've ever been told is that was the game that changed Gaelic football effectively. I actually remember last year I sat down to do an article which was looking at the most important game from every single year in Gaelic football, and there was debate about nearly every single one, because I consulted like people who know way more about the game than me, in the office and outside the office, and the only one that there was universal agreement on was 2014, the Dublin Donegal game, because of what that meant for how football evolved. So that was, like, just to refresh people's memories, that was Dublin running into a Donegal wall, getting turned over, and Donegal breaking on top of them and scoring off that, right? That kind of scenario. So the reason that is such a valuable scenario, oftentimes you hear people say, like, at the very least, put it wide. Like, don't drop it into a keeper's hand, or don't give the ball, like, kick it short. And there's actually a small bit of truth in that. Like, once you turn over the ball in that scenario, you're actually unstructured. So even if a team isn't breaking quickly, you get people with their backs to play, they're trying to get back into position, another team has a chance to build up, but it's unstructured. Like, you're not facing play, you're taking people out of their comfort zone, and within that your chances of scoring are a lot more likely.
So the argument was that county teams have kind of stopped that. Don't give the ball away. Like, the thing you hear in all championships so far is that turnovers are nearly going out of the game, that they're almost non-existent. And also you hear Joe Brawley nearly every week talking about how Dublin don't do that anymore. They don't give the ball away. They keep taking it out, hand pass, back to a man. Don't take it in with all this stuff.
Good accent.
But yeah. So right, with that, the Dublin Donegal 2014 game, all those turnovers, there's been a myth since then that doesn't happen anymore, that teams have evolved, that those turnovers don't happen. You don't give a team the platform to attack back. And it's actually totally inaccurate. After watching both of these games back, I'm fully convinced of it. And the stats actually back me up on this, right? Because what I'm talking about here is when you look at these teams attacking, running into someone and giving the ball back to them. So it's not kicking the ball dead or giving away, you know, like turning over from a kick out. I'm talking about that turnover. And you hear constantly teams say that doesn't happen anymore. They don't give those turnovers. Teams are a lot more careful. And that's not true. It's the Achilles heel of both Armagh and Tyrone, who have both good systems but aren't doing it right now. The reason that that's such a detrimental thing, like, obviously there's the wastefulness of a team like Armagh kicking the ball short or running into contact and getting turned over. Like, in itself, you're giving up a scoring opportunity. So, like, but at the same time, you're also hurting yourself defensively as well, because you've got players pushed forward, you're unstructured, you have players running back to try and get back in line to play. So you're not only are you robbing yourself in terms of your finishing ability, you're also punishing yourselves in terms of how defensively solid you can be. So you look at the weekend, for example, so like a stat that stands out to a lot of people, and I'm not even talking about this, Armagh had 10 wides versus Cavan's 3. They had 3 goal chances. You think about Jamie Clark kicking the ball wide at Nugent's really early in the game. I'm not talking about that stuff. That's not what I'm talking about. Well, I'm like, and so much of Armagh's play, so much of their structure is actually like, they were really impressive in terms of, I'm talking about like running lines, their attacking ability, the way they move the ball. Think about that very first goal chance for Nugent. Like, the way that ball was moved down the wing with James Morgan like driving forward, that was really impressive. The way they like getting runners onto the ball, pulling the Cavan left, right and centre. But the problem is that the amount of times that they gave Cavan a platform, like, say previously nearly 90% of scores would come from primary possession. You're talking about like your own sideline, your own free kick, your own kick out especially. This is where most of the scores are coming from. And then you turn around to Armagh. So what I looked at was every single Armagh score, and I'm not counting scores like just a random example. I did it for both teams. Cavan, when Keane Mackey kicked his first point, because that was a kick out that went over the sideline. I'm not even talking about when you turn over a kick out. I'm talking about when a team is attacking, they lose possession by either running into it or kicking it short, and the other team then have an opportunity to attack off that possession.
So it's just giving the ball away when you're attacking,
basically. Yeah, exactly. That's literally all I'm talking about, that situation, your conversion in that scenario. And in that scenario, the amount of scores that Armagh scored from Cavan giving them possession was 4 out of 17, so that's about 29%, which, like, it's still pretty high.
And three of them came within the space of, well, actually one of them probably doesn't count, but there were three. Cavan went out in the second half and got back into a 4-point lead and gave away 3 points in the space of about 90 seconds. One of them, to give the ball away, I think it was Conor Madden, Trey Dummy solo, gave it away in the middle of the pitch.
Yeah.
Armagh went up, scored a point. Kick out.
Turned it over, yeah.
Armagh caught the kick out, scored a point. Next ball, kick out, was out to Conor Rehill. He kicked it away. I'm hacking him up and scored a point. So that was two out of the four you mentioned were in space.
And the other two of those four was twice they kicked the ball off the post and they got a chance. So that seems harsh, but that in reality, that is what I'm talking about. Like, it's poor conversion. Ball comes back off the post. Armagh have a chance to attack. Cavan are pressed up and they get a score off that. So that's where the other two came from. Cavan's on the other side of that. So as I said, there are four scores Armagh got from that. Cavan scored 11 scores from that scenario. That's 48%. And what I'm talking about there is Stephen Campbell running down Killian Clark's throat, getting hit with a shoulder. The ball spills. Cavan immediate attack. Rian O'Neill run into contact, trying to get the ball back to Jamie Clark. He plays on the ground. Cavan take a quick free. Again, that could attack. That's what I'm talking about. And of those, it's 48%. And that, like, that
48%
is...
48% of Armagh's total
score. Of Cavan's total scores. Of their total scores in this game came from that scenario of running a ball down someone's throat and getting it fired back. Similarly, Tyrone, right? So Donegal, like, there's a misconception about Donegal, I think, over last year. Donegal are actually a way more defensive team than they're given credit for. Like, they played 3 sweepers against Tyrone last year. Hugh McFadden was going nowhere in terms of where he played at the weekend. They actually are a pretty defensive team. And that scenario, when you talk about 2014, breaking quickly, like, think about Michael Murphy's point. It's a classic example. Like, a quick free, Owen Ben Gallagher races out with the ball, gives it to Langan, gives the ball to Murphy. Murphy comes back into his right. It was 20 seconds from the time the pass was played to the time Murphy kicked the ball. That's how quickly. And
which point was the same?
Without Michael Murphy's first score, his first point on, in the left corner on his right push, coming back in on the right.
The Jamie Brennan's first goal couldn't have been much longer. I'd say that was, you're talking probably 8-9 seconds.
The way they moved the ball,
kick out to goal.
Yeah, and so like the that moving the ball quickly is one thing, because when Tyrone are trying to drop back, but especially when Tyrone actually give them the ball back and give them the chance to do that. So in that game, right, the round of scores that Tyrone scored from when Donegal gave them the ball back was surprisingly only 13%. That's because Donegal have so many players back that you don't have the opportunity to break forward like that. But now that Tyrone have committed to this new attacking structure and about trying to get forward, the amount of chances that they give to Donegal was 38%. Again, it's a lot higher. Like, so that's, you're talking 6 of 16 scores where Tyrone run the ball. So it's a long ball into McShane that Hugh McFadden intercepts and hands off to McMiniman, who comes racing off his shoulder, and they break from that. Or it's Owen Gallagher intercepting the ball and racing forward. That's the platform that you're giving a team to do that. But the point is actually that the problem isn't defense. Like, defensively, Tyrone got their matchups wrong. That's a separate discussion. Like, the McGeary on Brennan, within 20 minutes, that was so blatantly obvious it wasn't going to work. Like, he missed a goal chance, he scored a goal, he had 2 points, and he was fouled for Murphy's first free from, like, not from play, his first set-piece score. But away from that, like, that was one matchup issue. Their actual structure was good. It's just the fact that that one area is such a massive problem. And this misconception that those turnovers don't happen anymore, they actually do, because it seems to gift them back. But the where that would lead teams to go, like, Tyrone have a choice now. Tyrone might decide to suddenly revert back to type. And that's not the thing to do. Like, that's not to do. All you have to do is work on that final progression. Because if you work on that final progression, the 3 goal chances, that becomes 6 goal chances. That's 3 goals. At minimum, you also, like, your proficiency or your actual conversion there becomes way better, your accuracy increases, and the whole thing becomes so much better.
Yeah, I would question some of your, like, as in, your numbers are brilliant, right, and I get where you're coming from, but, you know, a lot of, like, 6 out of 16, they're just possessions in the same way. Like, so, you know, Donegal's first goal came from a kickout where Tomás O'Shea analysed why up front they didn't do, you know, what was needed to be done in that scenario to stop them looking exposed at the back. So, you know, I just don't understand how a team is supposed to never lose possession over the course of a game.
But no, it's,
you know,
it's,
like, there's tackles and there's, like, you know, ultimately you're not going to be able to always get your shot off and always, you know, a defensive system is going to be able to stop you at times. But, like,
the point is that, like, that level of wastefulness, like, that, like, think about, why do you see Dublin recycle the ball so often when they get into attacking territory? Like, why
is they're just not shooting? Is that, like, what you're saying? Is that they're
Or sometimes they are shooting, but they're Dublin are drilled in terms of the, like, percentages of success rate where they're shooting from. Like, look at you can look at scoring charts and they have, like, these graphs where they're always shooting from inside the D. And they're doing that for a reason. Kerry are actually the same way. Like, their shot selection is really, really intelligent. And that, like, that is the reason that's such a massive issue. Like, that's, like, people say that's wastefulness in terms of attacking, but especially when you're not even kicking the ball wide, you're actually, like, you're literally giving them the ball back. It's wastefulness in terms of your defending as well, because you're pressed forward. Like, it's an integral flaw, but it's just one, like, minor, like, not a minor aspect, because it takes time to fix that. But say, for example, Kieran Whelan, his analysis of Tyrone, this is going to be my whine later, but we'll just bring it up now. His analysis of Tyrone was the fact that they need to throw out their current system and revert back to type. Like, what Tyrone are trying to do is get to a level where they could challenge a team like Dublin. That's what they're trying to do. Donegal, the way they played the weekend, will not challenge Dublin, because Dublin will not give them that opportunity. So, like, they will mirror how Donegal set up. They're totally happy to do that. If you want to play Dublin that way, they'll do that. Whereas Tyrone tried to commit to something that didn't work. But if Tyrone could fix that flaw in terms of how their shot selection comes off, they'd actually be a lot better place to challenge a team like Dublin than Donegal would. That sounds crazy when they've actually lost, but it's true. Like,
They were hammered in a game that they were favourites, and I know it was 4 points on the scoreboard, but it wasn't. They were so well beaten. Like, I think it does come down to more than that. What you're saying is absolutely a factor, but they also were cut wide open. Like, and that comes from it might be not having enough reps as well as playing man to man.
Yeah.
Well, it was like as if some of those defenders, and I'd not bring it back to Hurling, but this is something that they talked about with Clare as well, and you've been used to playing with a sweeper sometimes. This has gone back, but, you know, when you're used to playing with a sweeper, is that you almost don't know how to mark anymore. And I thought that's what Tyrone looked like they were doing. It looked like they just didn't know how to handle runners off the ball because they're used to having so many people back there.
I guess like the reason McCart initially brought in this system was because he didn't trust in his man markers anymore. Like they don't have the man markers of, like, yeah. Paul just mentioned Mayo earlier. They don't have that. Now, in saying that, like, it's from me personally, that's a minor tweak. Like, you get your matchups right. Don't leave McGeary on Brennan, who's responsible for including a goal of the first five scores, and then is also setting up like his own goal chance. Like, make that, that's down to reaction on a sideline. That's getting that matchup right. Myself and yourself, Mick, last week talked about the fact that maybe Park Hampsey could do that job. He was so good on McManus last year, but they're using him further out the field. Like, that kind of adjustment. Cassidy instead of Kennedy, again, I think that was a mistake, like not starting Cassidy. But that stuff is like personnel, in terms of it's not a structural change. Like, that's that they're flaws. They're 100% flaws.
Yeah.
But I don't think I actually think the structure is solid. Like, I think the structure is closer than people are realizing. And similarly for Armagh, by the way, I think they're a lot better than people realize. Like, as I mentioned, the way they move the ball is really clever. They cracked Gallagher's second kickouts in the second half. Like, the amount, yeah. Think about
it. Is funny with Armagh though. It's kind of what we mentioned last week. Like, yesterday's game was brilliant, but Armagh abandoned like a lot of their defensive setup that they had last week, which, like, they slowed down Cavan's counterattack. Cavan couldn't kick the ball in because, one, they were too slow in getting it out from their own half, and then secondly, by the time they did that, there were Armagh players flooding back. They don't do that, and they lose the game by 6 points.
Yeah.
Like, and the game before that, Monaghan and Fermanagh, as much as we love to say, oh, the blanket defence, you know, it's a thing of the past, and this ugly defensive football, it doesn't work anymore. Fermanagh were a point down in injury time, would have free to draw the game and a man down against a team that was in the All-Ireland semi-final last year. Like, I don't know if they went all out attack, if they'd be within 10 points of Monaghan.
Mm.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Its ceiling though.
Yeah,
and that's the issue.
That's exactly. Like, that's from Tyrone's perspective and from Mickey Hart's perspective, that's their problem. Like, they found their ceiling with the style that they had, and for like the Dumler sitting target now. Like, they know what Tyrone know what they need to reach, and then that's what they're trying to find out now. Like, the only way they're going to find that out was against like a top tier one team against Donegal and trying it out there, and not like they'll worked out that what they did, like playing McGeary on Brennan, that was trying to put him on the back foot, like this thing we talked about, like an attacking cornerback, but it wasn't working because he's not a good enough defender. So then you swap it, like you need to adjust in the moment as well.
So I'm just interested to know what they're supposed to do in attack then, like that makes them more like Dublin, because they don't have the scoring forwards that Dublin have. You know, they're not as good as Dublin, I would argue, player for player. So when you see, you know, the two kind of wing forwards that you know, off the bench, that, you know, sometimes it has success, more often than not they're kind of running up blind alleys, doing kind of like insane kind of weird solo, sometimes keeping it, sometimes being fouled, but generally being dispossessed.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about. When that happens, like, what are they meant to do instead of that? Like, just keep passing it forever until Donegal's 15 men behind the ball, 12 men if you're a little bit penetrated, somehow make a mistake?
Is the sad answer to this that it's a very boring one, in that you just don't give the ball away and do the Dublin on it, which makes Dublin horrendous to watch sometimes. But they're just like, you know, no matter. There's a thing with Dublin that actually I've kind of noticed, that whoever makes the run doesn't shoot. So if you run by a player, you're not actually shooting at the end of it. They're hand passing it off to someone else.
Because your chance of success after making a long bust and run are a lot less than opposed to somebody who's a sitting market. I'm really glad you asked that question. It's a great point. What you're supposed to do is the variance, like what Cavan did. So think about a guy like Derek McVeady. Like, Derek McVeady was, as we always talk about, an inside target man forward. But let's say, for example, when they've worked that out, so like suddenly there's two men in front of him, and Darren McVeady caught four balls directly from Raymond Gallagher, directly from a goalkeeper. That's him coming out the field, somebody else going inside. Martin Riley at one stage was back sweeping. He was the furthest player forward when he kicked his point. Like, that kind of variance within it. So what Tyrone's biggest issue, and it's the same issue, we can talk about this in hurling as well, is predictability. Like, Donegal knew what they were going to do. Kick long to McShane, as Donnelly generally getting on the ball as that like link man and kicking long into to McShane as opposed to any sort of variance at all. Like Tipperary are the geniuses at this. So you can't work out their attacking structure because they're constantly rotating.
Yeah.
And the principle is the same. Like you need that kind of variance. It's funny actually.
And Donegal did a bit of that, in fairness to them. You didn't know where lads were going to pop up for Donegal. Like, you know, yeah, Murphy being the prime example, but it was more than him. McBearty was in different places. Everyone was, really.
Absolutely. And yeah. I'll do a piece up on this, and like Donegal definitely deserve credit for in terms of how they did that. But like, just the final thing on this, I actually last week I put out a call on my own Twitter, like away from work, just looking for, I just finished a course and I was looking for other examples of how GAA statisticians analyze games with a pen and paper. So just ask people randomly, can you send me whatever you have, anybody? And some of the people were really, really generous with what they sent me, including somebody, like, without getting into it too heavy because I know he listens to the podcast, somebody who actually analyzes games for clubs, for high level clubs, sent me his entire analysis, what he did for these clubs. Like, it was immensely generous and I'm really grateful for it. One of the things he was analyzing within for this team was their, so he was looking at like technical proficiency and, you know, their intensity for opposition chances. So you're looking at like their GPS scores or their accelerations, decelerations when they're trying to close somebody down, and that's how you'd monitor that kind of stuff. But one of the other things he was looking at was like an outlet under pressure. Like, how did players react when there's a situation where they need an outlet, they need a go forward ball? How are you, like, who's moving more, whose GPS scores are higher, whose accelerations are higher? And the classic example of that is someone like McVitie. Like, the amount of times when Cavan are literally under the cosh and he comes forward, like, all of a sudden makes a lung bursting run to get on a ball from a kick out, or when Armagh get the ball back to a one score game, who's the player who won the kick out and then ends up kicking the score? Darren McVitie. Like, he produces in those areas is when he's actually at his best, I suppose.
You talk about under pressure as well. Darren McVitie, Patrick Bourne's was on him. And to say that he didn't give him an inch would be an understatement. Like, Armagh were up the other end of the field, like Jamie Clark, ball on the ground, lining up a free, and Patrick Bourne's would be standing in Darren McVitie's face, standing nose to nose from the point that they were actually almost touching noses. And even when McVitie went off behind the goals to get a drink of water, Bourne's just matched him step for step. And just like nothing, you know, it wasn't dirty or anything in it. It was just, I am in your face, and wherever, if you move one step left, I'm moving one step to my right. And yet McVitie would all of a sudden, your eye get distracted for a second to where the ball was coming in, and all of a sudden you'd look around at McVitie, I mean, was 5 yards out in front getting the ball. This is incredible.
And that's, I suppose, just as a final word, like that, I wonder, was that what McShane needed to do? Like, would Neil McGee have been as comfortable being on top of him if they're out in the middle of the park, for example? Like, if you bring a fullback out there, all of a sudden, like, is McGee as comfortable trying to get, like, suffocate him there as he was in the inside? Like, if they played a second player, like Peter Hart's loss, you can't underestimate that. But even if they had a second player in where he was, like, would that suddenly, that, like, it's small little variances. I know these things are complicated, but they're little, like, minute changes that can have massive impacts. I'm gonna pencil that in as my 30-second whinge, despite the fact that it was
done for about 20 minutes.
Yeah. We get 30 seconds, Mark. That's who's in charge here?
Well, I didn't take one last week and I allowed you two, so 30-second whinge time.
Yeah. Before I start, like, I do have things like genuine criticisms and conversations that I want to get to about an absolute crisis in Clare and, to a lesser extent, Waterford Hurling in a few minutes. But I do have what would actually be described as a whinge ready to go. It's not based on any kind of analysis around it. It's just whinging.
Spot on. This is what the segment is for. Yeah. 3, 2, 1.
Joe Brawley. Right. He was on, first of all, he was sitting on Colm O'Rourke's lap. It was one of the weirdest things I've ever seen. And then he wouldn't shut up the whole time. Anytime O'Rourke talked or Joanne talked, Brawley was like he was in physical pain trying to get in. He not only would he interrupt all the time, but when he was told to shut up, he would look down at his feet and just kind of mutter away to himself, trying to get in. No time for anyone else. He would literally just stand in a room, listen to himself talk for the rest of his life, I'd say. He doesn't have any interest in what anyone else has to say.
You're out of time.
That was perfect. 27 seconds. I say, Joe Brawley interrupting people has been one of the biggest irritants in my life for the last 5 years. It's incredible. Like, had nothing to do with like whether he's right, wrong, or
absolutely. Yeah,
it's literally just interrupting people is driving me mad.
Colm O'Rourke was trying to make a very small. The match was about to start, and he was trying to make the smallest point in the world about Michael Murphy having to do a little bit more. And like, I'd be on Brawley's side here about how good Michael Murphy is, but he wouldn't let him say it. And it was just, and it was like when eventually he shut up, he sulked. And anyway, look, I've had my rant about that, but.
Him and Kieran Whelan are on together, it's hilarious. Kieran Whelan or Tomás O'Shea, it really gets to them every time he interrupts them. Yeah. You can see them, like, Whelan just throws his eyes up to heaven at the end of it.
He's like a child.
Right, Mark, you're up.
Right. 30 seconds. I don't think you even need 30 seconds this week. My rant. Are you counting me in?
3, 2, 1, go.
Lads at GAA games, grown-ups especially, with those bloody horns that you blow, air horns. No, not the squeeze ones, the one you blow, or the squeeze ones, whatever they are. Horns at matches. Everyone having a great time. And then you keep incessantly blowing this feckin' horn. Look it, you're not funny. You're not original. You're a dose of shite. And stop it.
That is what this segment was made for.
It's so annoying.
That's a whinge and a half, yeah.
We'll talk about hurling next.
Why? Why do you... Like, it's not even... What do you do? You're not celebrating now. Ooh, I want to celebrate this by that.
Nobody counted us in all year. The media.
Where did this ferocious determination out there today come from?
The media.
Right, Mick, we can't avoid it any longer. Claire.
Yeah.
You were at it.
I didn't go in the end, no.
Did you not?
No.
Foresaw what was coming.
I did a little bit. I had a few other things that I had to
get to
do, and eventually, like, I just decided to watch it on TV. And when I saw the rain when they were doing the analysis of the Galway Kilkenny game, I was pretty happy. But then it looked like it dried up for the game, and you know, in the same way as last week, it started off well. And look, Clare well beaten, and there's something seriously wrong there. And ultimately, like, I mean, I was tweeting it during the game. Like, I think for all the credit you can give Limerick and should give Limerick, and the same for Tipperary last week, Clare are obviously out of sorts. They're obviously not this bad, and there's something seriously wrong there. And you have to question the future of the management team. I don't think there's any chance that they get out of Munster now. They technically, what they need to do is beat Cork and hope that Limerick beat Tipperary to make it a two-way tie on 4 points, so Clare go through in the head-to-head. I see no chance of them meeting Cork next week, because I just think the heads are absolutely gone, and I can even understand why at this stage. So I think that it needs full-on root and branch, to borrow GEA cliche, and it needs a complete change of management and a completely new structure. And the biggest thing I want to talk about from the game, right? This has been something that's been going on for a few years, and I think anyone who's kind of seen Podge Collins play any time since 2013 especially will see this. The hardest working guy nearly on the team, you know? But what is it about Clare, of any team that I've ever seen play hurling, that they can't get any clean possession whatsoever? So every time they get the ball in the hand, they somehow take it into contact. I don't know why, all the time. They never avoid it. They always take the touch and go straight into contact. And what will inevitably end up happening is their space will be closed down, it'll turn into a scrap, and they'll hand pass it off. So that'll be successful some of the time. They'll drop the ball, which happens an unbelievable amount of time, and they lose possession. They give away a free, they might win a free, or it turns into a mad scrap with about 40 people in there. And for that reason, especially, like, Clare are awful to watch at the moment. And, you know, they've been on TV all three of their games so far. And it's one of the bloody main reasons that we'd be hearing so much about the lack of football and how much hurling has been on, because they've been actually awful to watch. And it's like, it's better for the game if they're, you know, if it's Limerick, Cork and Tipperary going forward out of Munster this year, for the rest of the championship. But it just doesn't make any sense to me. If you look at when the forwards did eventually get ball, blocked down 50% of the time, I'd say. I haven't done the in-depth analysis and watched it 6 times like you did, Maurice, because I wouldn't be able to bring myself to do it, to be honest. It was so depressing. It was a genuinely embarrassing performance in lots of different levels. And I know we're going to talk a little bit about that in a minute, in terms of how much you can talk about effort and performance over that. But in specific to the tactics, and it starts off with the puck outs. They puck it out, you know, it just a goalkeeper completely in his own head, runners that are completely in their own head. They got to the same problem they did against Tipperary last week, where they were standing in what they looked open, but clearly four players were ready to pounce on them as soon as they caught the ball. They hit it over out into the sideline, they hit it straight over people's heads that came back over the bar. And, you know, you're adding up when the game is close, and suddenly that's 3-4 points gone straight away, and it's like, Jesus, how are we supposed to stay in this game? But it was so much more than that. They just can't get any kind of, they just seem to have absolutely no game plan with the ball in hand, except for somehow take a man on, like as if it's the easiest thing in the world. Maybe that they get past them and take somebody out of the game. I don't actually know what the thinking is. I'm sure there is some, but they are, the fact that they haven't adapted after 3 games either is just a sign that everything is just completely gone to shit there, and it's not coming back, you know?
Yeah, I'm actually, like, to bring us back to the last time that I saw Clare use possession really, really well was when they played Galway in the semi final and brought Galvin back, and he, you know, he had acres of space.
Day.
Yeah, yeah, and he, you know, he had loads of space to use the ball, was actually really smart with it. But like, I, to go back to my conversation earlier, like, to what extent is that down to a lack of like actually, you look at Limerick's depth, like the fact that, you know, they're like, their subs is incredible. To see Darragh Donovan, Dowling and Flanagan come on together is like, that must be a frightening prospect. If I was looking, trying to analyse Clare and look at it in terms of outlets, right, the same way Galvin was poking the ball long, he was either going into Conlon with O'Donnell playing off him or on top of Duggan. And then now you look at Limerick with these like effect bodybuilders, these massive players who swarmed Duggan, and in fairness, like, he tried to match them physically and was probably one of the only players that did it.
Yeah,
and certainly in the first half. Like, if you're to what extent is that down to just being predictable? Like, that the team, they're actually a kind of a sitting target now. The teams know what they're going to do.
Hugely. But it's because they are, yeah, but it's they're predictable with a system that I don't understand how it would ever work in a million years. I don't know otherwise, what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
I genuinely don't. They're not getting the ball in the half back line when they have that bit of space from the hand pass that might have bought them and looking up and picking out a man or anything like that. They did it once, I think, in the entire game, which was in Dermot Ryan came on at half time and he did it about 10 minutes later and laid a lovely ball up the line. And it was the only pass that they made in the game that I would consider a pass. They got a score. They got all their scores from free except for one in the first half. And that score from play came from Peter Duggan getting blocked down again, because that's what happens, and a couple of ricochets later meant he got the ball in his hand and put it over the bar. There was no, and you know, you can talk about the heads going down, you can talk about them dropping, and you can talk about strength and depth. It's a huge important point, and probably the reason that Clare can't compete with the top, like at the top level. But they're not 18 points worse than Limerick. Yeah. And they're not however many worse than Tipperary either, and that this all happened long before the subs come on. You know, Clare probably don't have enough strength and depth, and they probably are carrying one or two. But that's all it is. And look, you know, people will argue as to whether this team were ever any good, I suppose. And I think that, you know, regardless of 2013, even what happened last year proved that they can live with all these teams, whether they can get over and beat them or not. But this was obviously just completely not good enough, you know.
That dispossession thing is definitely, like, I've even noticed. I remember Clare Cork game during the league, which Clare somehow managed to lose, was that. It was just, like some of them you're looking and going, geez, Podge Collins has been fouled there. But at the same time, it's like, how did the keep end up having the ball in a 50-50 contest?
That's it. And to be honest, if you look back at yesterday's game, so many 50-50 contests that they lose. They don't win the 50-50 contest. When there's a ball coming through that's sort of on the ground between them, you could be fully sure that the Limerick person was getting to them. But to your point, yeah, sometimes you are crying for a foul. And fair enough, sometimes they look like they are. But they're getting themselves in that position because they're so close to the players. So Podge is always in the middle of three guys. And look, he's not really the problem. He's the example because people will see it, you know, in your heads if you haven't been analysing. It's kind of the way he plays. He's a battler to win possession. He's the guy who's almost supposed to be in the ruck. But everybody else, it's like they bring themselves into it. And then maybe there's an arm around the neck or something like that. On it. Like, Hannon had a brilliant tackle yesterday that they kind of called a free because he did have his hand around his neck. But I think he won the ball first.
The amount of times he gets that flick away is incredible.
He was absolutely fantastic. And I actually feel annoyed that I'm not talking more about Limerick, but I obviously have this. This is the last time we'll talk about Clare this year, you know. But they were fantastic. And there's lots more to come from them as well, which is good for the championship, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't understand what it is that there must be some conversation had somewhere where they're saying, lads, this is what we have to do when we win the ball. But it's so far past the line of reality at this stage that I don't think they can see it. I don't think they can see the wood from the trees as to what they're actually trying to do. When Davy Fitz was doing it, he got all the criticism in the world, and sometimes rightly so, but there was an actual plan there. It wasn't everybody's cup of tea, but it actually was, it was for a reason.
That brings us on to an interesting point, right? I want to put a tweet to you on that team of criticism. This is Mark Dunphy, the communications officer for Clare and the Clare senior hurlers. So he says, quote, "Disappointment and anger is understandable, but some of the online commentary about the Clare players and management is way over the top. The group is devastated and is also trying to make sense of what has gone horribly wrong over the last two games. I am proud to be associated with the group for 5 years. To a man, they're an inspiration. They deserve respect and could do with support from within the county for next Sunday. We can still qualify by beating Cork. That's where everyone's focus needs to be."
At Mick McCarthy.
Oh no.
No, in fairness, like, Mick, your criticism there was more about kind of technical aspects, not about kind of like character aspects. I actually think that's more, that point, it's an interesting point, and it's actually more relevant when you look at a team like Waterford. Because Waterford spent a week hearing about the accusations of them downing tools, and like it's really hard to read what went on there. Like the demands for other managers supposedly, and we saw who was linked with it elsewhere, and then Park Fanning came in and had a decent league, but in a league that was, you know, like almost a non-contest to an extent, and they come into a Munster Championship and again flattered to deceive. But at the same time, like, I don't think you could, despite the result, I don't think you could accuse them of lacking fight against Cork at the weekend. And they made, like, there was a statement made at the start of that game, without a shadow of a doubt, when both teams went out, did, like, lined up, national anthem started playing, and Waterford all ran over to the sideline, left the field, ran over to the sideline and stood with Park Fanning for the national anthem. Like, it was as clear and obvious what they meant by that as anything they did on the field, as far as I was concerned. So, like, I think there's a threshold in terms of criticism that I maybe wonder, has it actually been passed when you look at examples like that?
I find it hard to know. And this is why we were talking about this earlier, and I said, let's talk about this, because I don't know. Because when I'm watching the match yesterday, and as I said, especially when you're at home, you do kind of have this urge to tweet rather than if you're at the game. And, like, I had a lot that I wanted to kind of say about the performance, but there is a part of me, and maybe it's just getting a bit older, and you come into contact with a few of these guys as well, and also you get a bit older. These lads are much younger than you as well, you know what I mean? You kind of see them as these guys who are 10 years younger than you, you know. And it's like, there was a part of me that just wanted to hold back. I don't think I would like Tony Kelly, for example, to see, to open his Twitter. He doesn't have Twitter, so he definitely doesn't use it anyway. So it's a hypothetical example of him opening a Twitter and seeing somebody saying he was shit or he didn't try or anything. Because there is a part of me that, one, you're still a fan of these guys. Two is, they are unbelievably good guys. Nearly everybody on every county team, we heard Derek McGrath saying that to us about the Waterford lad, and said it in general, is like, these are committed, really good, you know, solid young guys, you know, who are going out to do their best. They are more hurt than anybody by what happened.
Yeah.
And there's nobody suggesting, I hope nobody's suggesting, that they're not trying, you know, they're over trying, if anything, you know. And like, It actually does kind of, like, it would say, while you want to criticise and while you want to give out about somebody being useless or whatever, I would hate for them to see that, because that's not really how you feel. That's only how you feel in the moment. Ultimately, you're very, very disappointed. But, you know, what have I ever done that could match up to what they've done for me to criticise? And I think that goes to an awful lot of people. And it doesn't always have to be about amateurism. It doesn't have to be about that. They're playing a public sport, and we do need to analyse it. We do need to be able to dare and say that so-and-so might not be the performer that we want them to be or whatever. And you have to understand that people are going to hear that as well. And that's kind of, that's par for the course. They play a public sport. They're on television. They're famous. They're going to hear that kind of thing. But I think you can reach a level where you can be unfair. And when people say that somebody isn't worth something or is useless or, more importantly for me, isn't trying, or isn't trying to leg, I find that probably just a little bit much. And I think that it's something that you have to watch, because we'll all do it in the moment. Or a lot of us will anyway. Maybe nobody at this table, but a lot of people who wouldn't mean it, including me, might do that in the moment. And I think you have to be fair as well. Because taking Clare, for example, I think Waterford are a great example as well. That team got their county to an All-Ireland final, and had 10,000 people or 20,000 people come out in Waterford City to welcome them home, to greet them for what they've done. And they haven't performed since. But you think that doesn't bother them? I don't think anybody needs to be calling them names or suggesting that they've got nefarious, attitudes towards what they're doing.
I think on that as well, though, with, like, lads not trying, can often, or being asleep, that's the one, wake up.
Yeah.
That can sometimes not be that you're just absentmindedly, you know, not really giving it your all. It's more that sometimes you could have a confidence that they're actually overthinking it. Like, there's so many times, even in drills, you know, is it like in training or whatever, where you might give a bad pass in a drill or something, and then, and this happens so many times in the game, where someone might make multiple mistakes one after the other, where you're kind of concentrating on some, you're thinking, should I have done that? Should I have given that pass to someone else? Should I have taken on that shot? Whatever it is. And the game's happening still around you, and you're kind of lost in thought. Who was it used to say? I think it was Enda McNulty, was like, a match is for reaction. After the match is for analysis. Analysis should not happen when you're playing, but it's just human nature. You can't not analyse, yeah. You know, I need to get on this ball. I shouldn't have done that. Oh, I'm going to be taken off now if I don't do this. So, like, there's so much going through a player's head. I remember one of the ones that stuck out to me was James McCarthy during the Euros, because everybody was debating whether he was, you know, it was before the Italy game. Was he going to be worth his place? that thing again of that he was asleep, that he was he trying or whatever. And you could see it just from playing sport, you could kind of see that maybe this lad's actually just overthinking everything and his confidence is low. And I remember he got taken off. He had a brilliant game against Italy and got taken off with 10 minutes to go or whatever. And everybody from the bench, Martin O'Neill, Roy Keane, all the clubs, they're all up to welcome him off the field because you could see this was a lad who, it wasn't that, you know, he was making a point of almost that.
Wasn't for lack of trying, yeah.
You seen Tony Kelly yesterday. Like, as the game went on, he wasn't involved enough in the game in the first 20 minutes while trying to play in his position. He was being marked out of it. That was probably creating place for Clare forwards elsewhere that they weren't exploiting, obviously, for the reasons I've gone into. But what did he do then? He was desperate. He felt the need to be a leader and to go. And sometimes we praise that and say it's taken a game by the scruff of the neck. But all it meant was that Tony Kelly got an awful lot of possessions that he wasn't getting before, but he got them in useless positions, and he was in a position that he doesn't even know how to play, and he was involved in losing the ball and all this. And it's like, that's him doing exactly what you're talking about there. That's him analysing his own performance, worrying about it and thinking, I have to do something, and going and just trying too hard. But the attitude will be, where does Kelly go in the big games? That'll be the analysis today. And it's funny enough, I kind of feel like there'll be a lot of that from the national media that'll be well thought out and analysed, and it'll be a criticism of as a hurler. But there'll be a lot of it in Clare that'll feel like it's a dig at him as a person.
Yeah.
And it is hard to find that balance, but you know it when you hear it.
And as a final word before we move off this, because we do need to move on, I think the only thing you're asking for is that criticism is okay. It just needs to be measured. So, like, say, for example, I know myself and yourself spoke off air about Ryan McCluskey, the Fermanagh footballer's tweet about Tiernan McCann. So he tweeted, he thought that Tiernan McCann's actions shouldn't have been highlighted on the Sunday game because a lad made a mistake. And he'd excuse him a mistake nevertheless, and an amateur player has been hammered by, I think he said, pundits looking to further their own egos. Now, like, he's wrong. He's totally wrong. Like, it's okay to criticise what McCann did. You're not calling for, like, him to be locked up, but absolutely he should serve a ban for that. You know, like, there's a balance to be struck with all this kind of stuff, but I think it's okay. Like, it is worth saying. It is okay when something like that happens to criticise it.
Well, that's an act worthy of criticism, like, outside of a performance. Like, that's something that somebody did mean to do. And, you know, that it's not our fault that he did that live on television. It's his fault, you know, and he needs to be taught. And I find it ironic that he's saying that about the Sunday game, because the Sunday game has, for 10 years, tried to make headlines where none existed by looking for incidents like that might or might not have been an issue, and led with them nearly at the start of their show and looked for headlines. Whereas they buried that in the middle of a game where they analysed two games at the same time, and they barely mentioned it at the end. And it was one of the worst incidents I've ever seen. And if Tiernan McCann doesn't get 3 months suspension, then I don't know what we're doing with the game anymore. But it was sort of like, for the Sunday game, I didn't feel like they went big in it, did you?
I suppose they'd done it before on the Saturday night as well, to be fair to them.
Yeah, true, yeah.
It is, like, even for Manna, there was a lot of handbag stuff. Now, I didn't see, there was very little of it shown in the Sunday game, because it was stuff after the final whistle as well.
They showed Hughes getting sent off.
That was still during the game. They had 2 men sent off that. Now, from what I'd seen live, there wasn't really anything major in it, and that was a bit more forgivable, because that's just them seeing they're after coming back to a point in it. They give away a silly goal in injury time and the whole season's up in smoke. Mm. And that's just a bit of frustration boiling over. The new monitor's about to waste time or whatever.
Yeah. But, like, I think Whelan made that point, actually. It was like, sometimes you lose the head a little bit. Yeah. And look, and for all the, some people on high will shout at you about that no matter what you do. But, like, players know that's understandable. You just lost a little bit. But then there's something that you made a decision to put your fingers in somebody's mouth. And I actually think we're not talking about it enough.
Well, we're not going to talk about it anymore now.
we as a GA community.
Galway, Mick, were you impressed?
I was very impressed by Galway. We did. We picked them. Me and PJ tipped them on the Thursday
preview
show.
Podcast,
if anybody's listening to the Guess the Handicaps. They were great. I'd be more interested to know what you think of them, but I was very interested in flipping around without, they don't have that many players to come in, as we've talked about before, and Concannon did actually go and come out and play
and
got a goal and actually kind of saved for the whole game. Cottle Mannion had one of those games that he does every year where it'll be just like, geez, Cottle Mannion is the best hurler in the country. And I'd be really interested to see, does he do it against Dublin or in the Leinster final again? Because that's what we need from him, because he's done that before. But more interesting was playing Adrian Toohey known to me as a cornerback. You're telling me he plays forwards for club, whatever, and he goes and plays wing forward, gets 2 or 3 points, makes a big difference actually in the forward line in the first half. And someone like Joseph Cooney, who had a really, really poor game against Wexford, looked like he'd been in America all winter, like he had, and then suddenly he's at wing back and has a stormer for me, but also just that kind of big wing back between the big centre back. Garrod McInerney has his best game in 2 years.
Yeah.
And for me, that Galway team looked balanced for the first time, well, all year, really, the first time without Joe, you know. And if they can do that again, and even if they can get through like Leinster final or whatever, you know, in this kind of form, and then bring Joe back into it, suddenly you're back in the mix. Like, so for me, Galway were brilliant.
Yeah, it's a cool way of experimenting. Like, we talked about the fact that, like, Whelan and Mannion are, like, Mannion was really good in the midfield during the league. Whelan was really good further out the field playing that Mannion role. But they also need, like, at least one of them, definitely Whelan, closer to goal because of how good a finisher he is. So they adjusted that way.
Whelan's touch, by the way, is just fantastic. There was a point he got out over the far sand where he just, like, his touch to control the ball just created such a space. And then he had a very, very old school kind of shot on the run while he was being blocked down that reminded me of hurling from the 90s that just went right over the bar. Like, he's just such a beautiful hurler to watch.
If I was Kilkenny watching that game, the second Murphy gets a yellow card, take him off Whelan. Like, put him on any other Galway forward, but take him off Whelan because he's in a world of trouble straight away there.
Yeah.
And as we found out, the other thing, like, just on the Tohi example, I like the fact that he's playing as a wing forward because their half forward line actually dropped back, so he's able to forage without the ball as well. He actually, I think when he initially played for the Galway intermediates before he played senior, and there he played as a wing forward. He's played as a wing back for his club as well, so it's not a position he's totally unused to. But just the fact that they were copped on enough to see that, to move Johnny Glynn to centre forward, I think is really promising.
Glynn, interesting. Like, it's interesting to have a ball winner at centre forward with everybody running off him. I want to talk about two more quick things about this game because I know we have to move on. We're out of time. I would still worry if I was Galway after what happened in the Wexford game, where you just let them back into it by kind of just disappearing and fading away. You couldn't kill off Kilkenny. And if the referee played the right, if referee did play the right amount of, the referee, Mark, I don't know if you saw this, he got 4 minutes injury time. And for 2 of those minutes, he stopped TJ Reid from taking a free.
By giving up 2 yellow cards. Yeah.
I'm sure that was going to be one of the whinges today.
And then blew up. It was, I'm not going to whinge about it, but it was just incredible. And if it was Kilkenny, I'd feel very, very hard done by, because they'd won the puck out as well. And, you know, that's a very, very good chance of a score, and they could have got the draw out of the game. The other thing I'll say, though, is so Galway need to fix that, because they were the better team by a good bit, and they still could have easily not won the game, the same as they didn't in against Wexford. The other point is Kilkenny. If I hear anybody criticising Brian Cody as, you know, for any reason this year, or saying that it might be time to move on or anything like that, if you watch the lineups there, and other than TJ Reid having one of those TJ Reid performances, he was absolutely brilliant. I don't think any of the rest of the Kilkenny team could have got onto the Galway team. They just do not have the players that they had. You know, obviously, it was the best team of all time. It's just not going to happen. They're just not going to reproduce that team again. And they don't. These guys are not anywhere near the league. They're in about 5th, 6th in the list, I would say, in the terms of pure talent. And yet, would you rule them out winning even All-Ireland? Because I don't think they're good enough, but the fact that they nearly won that game, or nearly came back and drew that game, or stayed in it the whole time, I think is just such a credit to them. Like,
final word on the hurling. All this talk about which championship is better, like Munster or Leinster, and you get like Leinster championship, people getting angry about the amount of games that show in the Munster championship. I want to put an argument forward for the Connacht championship. Roscommon finished top of 3A this year. Galway back flying again. Sligo this year, they're back to 7 senior clubs. They only had 5. They won the Laurie Maher in 2018. 2019, they finished top of 3B. They now have won 7 games, drawn 1 and lost 1 in the entire 2019 after finishing top of the Nicky Record Group 2. They won the semi-final and they're now in the final. So the Connacht Championship is alive and kicking.
Yeah. There is a slight problem there, is that they've drawn awfully in the next round of the qualifiers in the football, in the T-Gate 2.
Yeah,
it's a replay of T-Gate.
An incredible rivalry brewing away there.
For people who don't remember, the Offaly guy kicked the ball off the tee in the last game of the league. But
I thought you were making a pun on brewing there and tea.
Oh God, that's pretty good. It would have been pretty good if he was, but he isn't. No, but there are 2 dual players, and they probably are at the moment scheduled to play on the same day. Now, even if they could go Saturday, Sunday, I think it might be manageable, but I really hope that the hurlers, now that they've done so well, don't just lose so that Sligo can play a second round qualifier, you know, with all their best players. I think that would be a real pity at this stage, you know?
We're just speaking of other teams like that, I just thought it was worth mentioning as well for the Kildare Miners, who beat Offaly in the Leinster Minor quarterfinal on Saturday. And they seem to be regularly doing this at underage level. So there's another team on the Kildare Rising.
Yeah. I was going to say, because the familiar headlines for a story like that is another new low for an already rock bottom Offaly hurling. But actually, Kildare, coming, you know?
Yeah, they should be in the Joe McDonagh Cup this year, let's not forget.
Yeah.
Right, Mark, before we go, we have a performance of the week.
Yes, new segment here on the Three Man Week, performance of the week, never seen before. For this week's performance of the week, we're actually going to go to the Marty squad on RT Radio 1.
Some fans. This man is from Dublin. What's your name?
Sean White.
What part of Dublin are you from, Sean?
I'm from Ballyferma.
What did you think of your county's performance today?
Absolutely magical. Unbelievable. We're all talking about watching Cormac Costello and watching Kieran Kilkenny and Paul Mannion. But nobody ever thought that Cormac McHugh would come in and score 6 from play without a reply to them. You know what I mean? The man is magical. He just turns the game, the whole game around.
Paul Mannion, you're referring to?
Paul Mannion is unbelievable. And everybody's watching him and they're all trying to mark him. But Cormac McHugh was coming in behind that and banging them in. Banging them over the bar.
Now you're facing Meath in the Leinster final. Are you optimistic about that?
Absolutely, yeah, sure. There's nobody in Ireland to stop us, is there?
There mightn't be, but there's going to be a few that's going to...
Leinster.
Nobody in Leinster. Okay, well, let's keep... How about...
So there you have it. Our performers of the week is Conor McHugh, who scored 6 points from play, despite the fact that he wasn't even brought on.
Marty handled that really well. He'd commentated on the game. He knew exactly what was going on. You can't accuse him of not. And he tried to correct him to tell him it was Paul Mannion. And your man just took that as Paul Mannion was also good. It's like, and then Marty just didn't
bother Conor McHugh. Next
time. Let's move on to Meath.
Right, lad, any final thoughts?
Aidan Nugent's hop we didn't mention.
True legs, yeah.
Oh, beautiful.
Check it out on skill, it's on Michael Hannan's Twitter account to plug everybody involved in Cavan football nearly at this stage. But check it out. He caught, it was from a breaking ball. Nugent, I think it was Killian Clark, what did to block him. Nugent just hopped the ball through his legs. I have never seen that before in Gaelic football.
Two small Gaelic football thoughts. One was that was watching the highlights of Longford and Carlow and said to Mark, actually, there's an element of this feeling like an intermediate game, having watched a senior game beforehand, you know, when you're watching the highlights. And it's like, I do still wonder if we're a little bit too precious about the idea of having a third championship, given that there is a massive, massive difference in the standard of teams across, you know, and when you see them playing against each other, you really, really realise it, you know. The other thing is 36,000 in Croke Park yesterday for a double header for Leinster semi-finals. You know, I don't know how many of them are Dubs fans. There was a good few of them, as in they were the majority, but at the same time, that was 4 teams. That sounds to me like a lot less than 30,000, probably closer to 20. And, you know, where is this Dublin support? Where is this? And actually, outside of all the bullshit about unfairness and everything like that we always talk about, where is the Dublin support? They're going for 5 in a row. This could be the best team of all time. You actually, without it being this usual GA or bastard rant, what about Jim Gavin and his team? Where are the people supporting them?
I think they've accepted it to formality.
But go and support that. Go, like every other team in the world goes to see. For you don't see Barcelona fans not showing up because they're playing Levante. Go and see them. They're the best team you'll ever watch. They might not be the best to watch, but they're about to win 5 in a row, and I think they should have a little bit better than 20,000 people going to see them in the semi-final in a county of 1.5 million.
You're veering close to a second, 30-second wine, so I'm going to cut you off here and come in with some praise. My praise is for fullbacks, well, defenders in general, but particularly fullbacks, for their ability to put off free takers during this year's championship. It's been amazing. So we had David McInerney when it actually didn't work out for him because the ball came off the post and Callahan racked a goal. But,
but it was God loves a thrower.
He was dancing from right to left as the free was being taken from left to right and clicking his fingers trying to pull forward across the ball. It actually ended up going too far to that side, but it came off the post and didn't work out. The other one was Cathal McShane, who had a straightforward enough free at the weekend and had Neil McGee with his tongue out right in his face, kind of flicking his tongue at him like a snake, but it seemed to work anyway because he pulled that ball wide as well. So the best example, then, I put this up on Twitter and I got sent one from the AFL last weekend, which was of a straightforward free right in front of the post, and the man like marking the free or standing out in front of the free pretending to load up a bazooka and aim it into the sky, and as he took the free, letting off the bazooka and shooting the ball. And it went wide.
Catches your eye. I can imagine following the fake bazooka shot, actually.
Right, we'll be back on Friday to preview the weekend ahead, but in the meantime, take it easy.